Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
You know what that means. The Mark Order Podcast coming to you live with an episode that for me was, I thought I was at Six Flags Great Adventure, Ryan, because this episode was such a roller coaster from where I'm sitting. But we're going to talk about all of it and more. I got asked immediately by Jamie what this tracksuit is, and it's a TMDK tracksuit. Jamie, I will message you something extremely funny in regards to something that happened tonight. But because I know you, I love you, and I can trust you. Something very, very, very funny popped me huge, actually. And we will discuss that off air. But I felt like we got one of the worst intros to Dynamite of all time. Thought that was one of the worst opening segments I've ever seen in my life. And also, we got Kenny Omega versus ZSJ, and we got Bad Dude Tito versus Kenny Omega on the way to get there. So I am a happy camper. I am intrigued to see what Ryan's thoughts were overall, because sometimes I feel like I'm not watching the same show. Like, the way that this show ended was nothing like the way the show started. So, Ryan, what did you kind of think overall?
So, are you saying it was a roller coaster of love? Roller coaster.
At parts it was of love. Mm-hmm. At other points it was not so much of love, for me at least.
I enjoyed the show. I have thoughts on the opening segment, which many people have thoughts on. My thoughts may vary from most people, so we will see. But overall, I mean, the second half definitely changed the grade for the entire show.
I think that's a very fair thing to say. I do want to say we like sometimes talk about some newses and notes up at the top of the show, but I most importantly wanted to highlight that Maya World unexpectedly lost her brother, and I hate to like start the show on kind of a down note, but there's a GoFundMe going around for it. I think it was her younger brother. It's just a very sad, sad situation. Very unexpected to her. I thought it was a really classy move to put her in the tournament tonight. I thought she was going against Mercedes in my brain, or would be lined up to go against Mercedes in my brain, but I think she's probably losing to Athena next week. So I was like, oh, that's classy, because I don't know if a lot of people know this. Maya started as like a Mercedes stan account back in the day. She actually had my boss blocked, or vice versa, because she was like a Sasha Banks stan. So I'm glad that they gave her that rep, because for a lot of people, especially wrestlers, it's like sometimes that's the place you need to go to make things feel better. Just our thoughts and condolences to her. That's such a tough situation. If you are able to donate, we do encourage you to do so. That GoFundMe is all over her social media. I know Fightful posted about it in their stories yesterday and stuff. So I think if you're able to, it's a great way to support, help in times that are very, very difficult. But other than that, Ryan, not a ton going on in AEW world. There is a small note that was on Fightful Select about the fact that this summer AEW is expected to add some of these nationally televised acts that will be free agents, which I think it's probably pretty obvious what ones those are. Like, certainly nobody can name names and nobody can put pen to paper yet, but I think they would be nuts to not be signing The New Day and not be signing Motor City Machine Guns, etc. on that. Other than that, there were plans
for... You're forgetting someone.
Who am I forgetting?
Recently just got, because, and I'm only saying this because this is someone Sean, I think on In the Weeds, might have said he highly expects to go to AEW now. So you've actually interviewed this man's wife.
Oh, Mr. Macklin?
Yes.
This is what happens when you only do a few interviews. It's actually very helpful to narrow it down. I would love to see that. I know that's something that the infantry has been asking for a very long time. Like, they've been not quiet about it in interviews. They've been not quiet about it on social media. So I think that that would be a phenomenal fit.
I'm loving the big G saying Jeremy Macklin, former Eagles player, former Eagles wide receiver. Really do appreciate that, big G.
Nailed it. That's exactly who we're talking about. So, yeah, I think Macklin would be a great fit. I think there's people that are wanting him for, like, his wrestling mind as well. So longer term, I think there's some really good possibilities there as well. So some good stuff, but let's get into this episode.
Even still, Macklin had a good career as a wide receiver. So, see, we all know.
Of course. You want to dive into this episode of Dynamite?
We might as well dive headfirst.
The Knicks are getting spanked, so Joe is probably off sad somewhere. We will dive into this episode of Dynamite.
They're pulling within 20 points.
I mean, for the Knicks, that's usually second quarter play, I feel like, is what we get there.
I will say this, and we can move on. And you know me, I'm not a Knicks fan because it's the Knicks. They have shown many times in this playoffs that they can go on insane, like, 14-0 runs and stuff. It's tough because you would think the Spurs would be good enough to prevent them now from getting back into it. But we'll see. I can't count on that yet. But yes, let's start with this Dynamite.
Let's dive in. This opening segment was horrendous. We had Tommaso Ciampa and Jericho opening the show. Tony Schiavone introduces Tommaso Ciampa, who makes Tony Schiavone repeat what he was forced to say on Collision, which is that Ciampa is better than Chris Jericho. When Schiavone hesitates, Ciampa threatens to break his neck in this, and we get Jericho interrupting and just, like, repeatedly calling him Tommy, which was weird. Tommy, mommy, chance. Like, this whole thing was awful. Jericho says that Ciampa is jealous, and he returned expecting to be the biggest star in AEW, only to realize Jericho kind of overshadows him, and Ciampa throws the mic down and attacks, and security separates them, but Ciampa breaks free and fights Jericho on the ramp. This was such a bad opening, and not what I would have opened with on the show either. I felt like all of this was terrible.
I'm guessing, okay, that's my time.
Yeah, I don't have anything more to say about this other than it's, this is, if you wanted to pull up the trash can deal, that's where we're at.
Hold on, just because we so rarely get to use it. Hold on. That this garbage is not for you. Here's what I'll say. It's probably a 1 to 2 on my scale at various points in this. I wouldn't have opened with it. I can completely agree there. It didn't have the the good feel for an opener. Middle of the show might have been a bit better place for it. It wasn't perfect. It had its flaws. I think I saw what they were attempting to do. I think some of it worked and some of it didn't. And what I think worked is that Ciampa is an extremely serious figure. Like, he's no nonsense talk. So when Jericho comes in and is like, "You're bald," or "I'm calling you Tommy," and his, "No, you don't call me Tommy. That's not my name." Like, it's a very, I laughed because that's a funny response to someone being just a troll. Like, he's too serious about it. Did it go on too long is probably the flaw there. They could have cut a couple minutes off of this and it probably would have hit a lot better. You know what it would have worked as? It would have worked as a 30-second to a minute backstage promo.
Yeah, probably. I just also feel like Ciampa is serious and he seemed like such a badass going into everything except for this program. And, like, I thought the list segment on Collision was fantastic. I thought this was hot garbage because he's just been vicious And it feels like the losses were all leading to something, and then they were like, JK, we're going to do this Jericho program instead, which I thought was really bad. Really bad. And definitely went on too long, as most Jericho segments do. I have no idea why this was opening the show when you have Mercedes Moné, like, or I guess, I'm sorry, when you have, like, two Owen Hart Cup matches, you had MJF on the show tonight, you have, like, such better stuff that you could have pulled from. You had this amazing Orange Cassidy and Andrade match. I thought that was a blast. Especially the Sting pants spot, which we'll talk about in a moment. But I would have
done it where, like, maybe Tommaso Ciampa's in the back talking to Renee and Jericho walks up on him, makes a ball joke, calls him Tommy. Tommaso's, that's not my name, gets all mad, and then they walk away. Like, I would have done it like that. Because I think it's very funny that Tommaso is so serious. No, that's not my name. My name is this. Like, I just think that's very funny in response. But it just dragged on too long. It clearly
that is
was.
Fair. I also just feel like, is this for Forbidden Door? Like, what is this? Like, what is this program? That does not feel like a Forbidden Door program on several thousand levels, including that there are a lot of people I would like to see Ciampa face in New Japan before I would ever want to see him face Chris Jericho. It's like a huge gap and then Jericho. So if this is just a TV feud, fine, I guess, but
I'm hoping it's a feud, even if it ends up on a pay-per-view. If Ciampa comes out winning, I'm okay with this. Because
he fucking better.
Yeah, he needed a win. I think he needs a win in a feud. And I think beating Jericho still has enough to it, especially after Jericho just won his feud against Ricochet, that you could now give this to Ciampa and it could be a little bit of a boost for him. Again, I'm not going to praise everything, but I understood their idea of, like, Tommaso's super serious. He can't take anything as a joke. Jericho's, even when he's at his most heely, he tends to have joking nature to him. It works. But what should have been a 30-second to a minute backstage with Renee was in the ring, and that just didn't work. And I think it was only in the ring because they knew that they would say something to get a chant, like Tommy's mommy, which, okay, I get why fans want to chant that.
Yay, rhyming.
Though I will say, Corey on Twitter had the best one where he said they missed out on calling her Mamaso Ciampa.
Mamaso Ciampa is, now see, that is great. That is a world-class
and
word.
Corey Michaels, that was, but again, I'm not sitting here saying it's world-class. Yeah, the Knicks are making somewhat of a comeback. Still down 19 points. I'm not saying it's the greatest thing of all time. I'm saying I enjoyed parts of it, and had they just done it differently, I probably would have enjoyed all of it.
That is fair. Let's skip around a little bit to... I guess, we can kind of just go in order tonight. There's not, like, anything super-duper hot to talk about. We do have this Jon Moxley-Shane Taylor Continental Championship match. I have been saying that Shane Taylor Promotion should be on the main roster for a long time. I am very enthused to see them making Collision appearances, them dropping their six-man belts and suddenly showing up on AEW feels like maybe they are starting to do some more crossover from ROH, like people getting promoted in a sense. But you have Shane Taylor using his size very early in this, but Moxley just cornering him and trying to fight back with body shots. And you have Moxley sending Taylor with a boot and the suicide dive to the outside, which I thought was fun because we don't get a ton of stories of, like, Moxley fighting someone that's so much bigger than him that his violence doesn't always, like, kick in. This match just felt like it had a little bit of a different stink on it to me. You have some nice timekeepers area spots and some choke slamming with Moxley here. You have Moxley fighting back. This is so funny, like, this group being, like, vaguely babyface. Like, we get a babyface comeback from Jon Moxley in this with boots, with a lariat, with mounted punches, with an eye gouge. Like, an eye gouge shouldn't be a part of a babyface comeback, but it kind of was here. You have Shane Taylor answering with that top rope headbutt and a big splash for two. But eventually you have Moxley tapping out Shane Taylor by trapping the leg and stomping on him applying that bulldog choke. So Moxley retaining here. Then post-match, Shane Taylor attacks Jon Moxley after the bell and whips him with that championship. We get Carly Bravo and the rest of Shane Taylor Promotions joining the beatdown with Daniel Garcia and Marina Shafir trying to help, but STP overwhelming them here. And Shane Taylor was just like, you know what? Another big splash for the road. What did you think of our match and our post-match here?
Won the next round a 13-0 run, which is awesome. Again, what I was saying, they can do that. The only tough part is when you've built yourself a 30-point deficit, you have no – you can't make a mistake. But back to this.
It's also late. It's getting late.
But also, yeah. Tim McFall's apparently, I guess, to catch up, listening in double speed. I don't know how you listen to me in double speed because I've been told I talk very fast. So I can only imagine how quickly I talk at double speed.
I don't think you're a fast talker.
I have been told most of my life I'm a fast talker.
Oh, I don't think that, but I'm also an egregiously fast talker. So maybe I'm just like, game recognizes like, game.
I mean, even on one of my history videos, someone put like, I go quick. And everyone else is saying the same thing. I'm very fast. And Tim McFall saying I'm better at double speed. Well, I'll slow down for you. This is my voice. Now, so you called out all the fun in the wrestling of the match. So I just, my favorite thing was the story, obviously. I like that Shane Taylor was presented as such a threat that like yes. Moxley had to get creative. They kept hyping up in the beginning that like Moxley can't go punch for punch. Shane might actually be faster than him. It's insane how good his conditioning. Like they hype him up, and then not only do they hype him up with like the words in the match, you can see that every time Mox started to get something going, Shane could shut him down because that's who Shane was. And even with the finish, they made a really good point of being like, as soon as Mox hit it, he went for the submission. Like he wasted no time.
Yeah,
because he couldn't. Like I love that. That's how you. It's someone in a law, you make someone in a loss. Because that's how you say, like, yeah, he lost to Moxley, who, okay, how many times has he been champ? Like, that's legit. But Mox is afraid of him. Mox had to work for it. Mox had to, maybe not afraid, but you know what I'm saying? Like, he knew that he had to avoid stuff in the match. I loved that storytelling.
Mox having to fight from underneath is cool. Like, we don't see underdog Moxley all that much, but with Shane Taylor, that's the only way you can go. Shane Taylor's also, like, such a one-of-one promo, and he's in the style of, like, the Eddie Kingston-type promo, the Kevin Owens-type promo, which is, like, my favorite thing. And with Eddie not being on Dynamite right now and working ROH, like, I'm excited to have that kind of mic tackler here as well. Carly Bravo and Sean Dean also just, like, so much charisma. Trish Adora, one of the most underrated women's wrestlers in the world. So glad to see them getting some
great
shine. Group.
They need to. I'm glad that they're getting so much more time. You know, I don't think AEW's hurting for heel groups because apparently there's one group with 40,000 people, but they are different in the sense of like each heel group is different, and I like that theirs is like. They're not a business. They're something else. Like they're
not a business.
Well, Don Callis is all like we're a business and we're this and this. And then these guys are like they're kind of a mix of like the Death Riders and Don Callis, where there's a bit, you know, Shane Taylor Promotions, there's a bit of a business to it, but they're also brutal and they're fighting and they're cocky and they're arrogant and I love it. There's something good there. Yeah, and Shane Taylor's awesome. He's just But I just like the way they told the story of the match. I guess that's where.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think you're right. Commentary did a good job kind of like hyping them up too. So good stuff there. We move along to this Mercedes Moné vignette. She is back and they are now selling the mini Moné puppets, I believe I saw. So she kind of reflects on losing all the championships she had. She said that she spent 6 months watching the women's division waste opportunities and that the CEO was back, and she warns Hazuki that she planned to reclaim what belongs to her. So Or I guess just claim, because she hasn't won the big one yet. So, good stuff from Mercedes here. They kind of addressed the elephant in the room, which was that she lost the rest of her titles and was gone for 6 months. So, I'm glad they did that. She feels like she hasn't skipped a beat. She also looks like she put on a little bit of mass while she was out. She looks a little bit stronger, which I think is cool. I think when you're wrestling as aggressive of a schedule as she does, it can only help you. But this was a perfectly suitable vignette for someone who's a little bit into the Owen here. Her presence on Dynamite, I think, helped the ratings out a little bit. What'd you think of this vignette?
I mean, I agree with all that. The only funny thing is it's a bit of real life coming into wrestling, where, you know, I watched this division lose its power, it's like, yeah, sadly that's kind of true. And that's, listen, that AEW, if that's Mercedes wanting to use those lines, perfectly acceptable. I don't want AEW being the ones to use those lines, because you're the ones who made that happen. You're the ones who've taken the power from the division. But she's,
I agree.
But it's fun to have her back. I mean, she's going to provide a much needed spark in that division.
I agree. And it's tough because it was definitely noticeable as soon as she went away. And then it just got worse when Tony went away, and got even worse when Willow got injured in that brief period where she was gone. And Mercedes had not yet returned. Sheeta coming back, I think, has been helpful, because I like the stuff with her and Stat. But man, like, it's all their own doing. So I'm glad you pointed that out. But let's talk about something that I continue to think sucks. Why is Kevin Knight in the Don Callis family? I hate this. Don Callis introduces him. Knight blames Darby for disappointing the fans and Mike Bailey for ending Speedja.
Oh, excuse me.
He said that other wrestlers compete for star ratings. Well, he's the biggest asset in AEW, and Knight announces he plans to become Jet 2 belts and calls out MJF, but Darby Allin attacks. Strikes him with his skateboard, says he hopes New York was worth it, and then hits Knight with a coffin drop. But the Don Callis family members rush down. Who would have thought? And Darby Allin escapes. I don't want to see Darby Allin fight everybody in the Don Callis family. Kevin Knight, sure. I don't for a second fucking buy that this guy can, like, run through an entire stable. I don't like it. But, you know, sometimes I'm on the garbage scale, and that's tough. You know what I mean?
I agree with you that Darby's not the one who can run through a stable. Now, there is a world in which Darby can do a lot of damage to a stable if they really let him go psycho. And, like, he does, like, hit-and-run techniques and, like, you know, you'll see I'm just trying to think. Like, Lance Archer walking down the hallway, next thing you know, Darby's hit him with, like, a bat over the knee. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a world in which Darby, as a dirty fighter, can run through him. But he can't, like, as a wrestler, it just would get boring. I don't need to see that. I don't want Kevin Knight in the Don Callis family. Now, there's the least they threw in a bit of an interesting twist with the Andrade situation.
Sure.
If you're going to give me something I hate, at least balance it out with something I do enjoy, which is Andrade possibly being out of the Don Callis family. But I'm still naively, optimistically, stupidly praying that this is all a swerve to get him not with the Callis family, but in Swerve's group, and using the Callis family to get himself the matchup, but not actually belonging to them. The matchup with MJF, but not actually wanting to be part of the Callis family.
Would much rather that be the case, and I still think that's a dumb way to get there, but but I would rather that. I would rather that, for sure. Let's keep rocking and rolling. We see you all in the chat, by the way. We see Greg Cherry, 1LT Photo, Mike Peterson. Who else? We got Big G. We got Jamie, Tim McFowell, Scott George. A lot of homies in the chat. We appreciate y'all.
We had Matthew Hooks and Taylor Cannon before the show started.
Hooks and Cannon, hell yeah, we appreciate
that. Was like a tag
you,
team.
Dude. I know. Or maybe a law firm? Like tort law? Have you been injured in an accident? Call Hooks and Cannon. Let's keep rocking and rolling. Please do leave a thumbs up on this video if you're here, or even if you're not here. If you just hear this from miles and miles and miles away, and you're like, I need to like this video, even though I'm not here. Please do. Please do. We get Mark Briscoe versus Pac, and we have a very technical exchange in the beginning, which is cool. We get some hammer locks, some counters, and some clean escapes out of this, but they then are like, enough of that. We're going to just start pie-facing each other and trading chops here, but we get Pac with a brutal, brutal brainbuster on the ringside chair. We get your classic redneck kung fu clothesline corner attack stuff with a couple falcon arrows. And man, I love me a good Pac German suplex, because, man, these two just started suplexing each other, which was really fun. But Mark Briscoe hits the J-Driller. And he beats our old bastard here. We also get him challenging MJF, and we learn that that is going to be a match at Forbidden Door. I'm good. I don't need to see it. Not a fan. Like, we've just seen it before, and for Forbidden Door, I'm like, why? Like, even if Mark Briscoe held an ROH title or something, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just think that, I don't know. They need to figure out what to do with Forbidden Door, because it's starting to lose its luster a little bit. Nothing's forbidden about it.
I'm going in two different directions. Let me talk about the Forbidden Door thing first, then I'll come back to the match. I think Forbidden Door especially with now CMLL involved, I still like it because you're getting ZSJ versus Omega. You're getting like all these fun matchups that you don't typically get. And I'm okay. There was a few years back, and you can't do a Survivor Series style match, but a few years back, there was, you know, they would do SmackDown versus Raw in Survivor Series and it'd be like the big feuds of these events. There should almost try to get some like pride in the organization against each other, being like, you know, it's AEW versus New Japan versus CML. How many points can you get? I don't know, something to put like a story behind it, but just have these all-star matchups because that's really all anyone cares about. It's not supposed to be, no one really gives a crap about the stories going into it, to be perfectly honest with you. It's just to be, so the story should be like the best of New Japan wrestling, the best of AEW wrestling, the best of CMLL, who's coming out with the most points and make up some stupid reward. I don't know what it is, but like, you know, you have something. I mean, I guess the problem is like AEW would be like, why are we not? We have to win it all or AEW. Like, and it's like, okay, that'd be a problem. But if that happened every year, but still, I think there's a way to make Forbidden Door a little more fun besides just stop trying to make it anything it's not. What it's supposed to be is, you know, best wrestlers wrestling each other. Now back to Mark Briscoe and Pac. Pac, whatever.
The bastard.
Match. Mark Briscoe is a really good wrestler. It often gets lost in his craziness how good he can be. The Briscoes were very good, not because of just one guy. It was both those guys that made it great. I said it last week. I'm saying it again. I do not want Briscoe versus MJF. I'm done with that. I don't think Briscoe poses a legitimate threat. As much as I like him, it's not the feud for him. It's just, what are we doing? And now you have this whole six man in a steel cage at Forbidden Door. And I'm like, we're really forcing this.
Yeah. And it's also just like, there's people I want to see MJF face, you know what I mean? Like in other places. And it's like giving me a rematch of an AEW feud sucks. Like, I don't know. I like when there's stories going into Forbidden Door. I will say it's one of the most fun live events I've ever been to because it's just a giant all-star game. But even the all-star game loses its feel when you just are, like, within each other. I don't know why you don't do Andrade versus... Doesn't Andrade hold a CMLL title, or did I make that up?
He holds something.
I thought he held something. Let's find out.
What's the title that he walks around with?
Championships. I like to say that as if I am Lillian Garcia. She has the most obnoxious ring call of all time. Does he not?
He has the IWGP.
Oh, God, he has the global title. Yeah, what the fuck? Just do Andrade. I completely forgot he has the global title. Like, just do that. That's silly.
That's but there. That's nothing. If you don't want to do my idea of, like, all right, points is I'm just trying to get – then the month and a half up before it, have guys from CMLL end up on AEW TV, have guys from New Japan end up on AEW doing something to hurt the guy, and then you have a feud. Like, it's built in.
It felt like they were doing that with Ospreay, with like the United Empire and Death Rider stuff. Like that felt like it was being built out pretty well. Part of the problem is it's just like there's so many people from New Japan here. Like the dogs are here. You know what I mean? Like, and they dissolved Bullet Club or whatever. So like it's, I don't know. It's a little tricky. Zach is a super reliable choice for obvious reasons. Like that guy is a New Japan guy and he's top wrestler in the world, and if you need to throw something together, that's a good way to go. But like, I hope next year for Forbidden Door they just do the whatever weekend WWE is in Saudi for Mania, like just do like a best of the indies and whatever, like make it truly, because the door is just very much not
forbidden weekend,
but yeah, just do that. Like, just do that.
You do an ROH show on Friday. You do a Forbidden Door early on Saturday, you know, before or Sunday. Early on Sunday, because you want to give Saturday. Early on Sunday before the WrestleMania second night, you do all the indie stuff. Yeah, I would make Forbidden Door the indie event where like all that stuff like comes around.
WWE is in Saudi. It used to be now WrestleMania weekend, right? Do like a big, beautiful celebration of professional wrestling. Run the indies, do ROH versus MLW or whatever the fuck you want to do. Like, I think there's so many ways that you could go about it, but people might be like, how you know that's a good idea?
How you know?
How you know? We got Orange Cassidy and Andrade. This was a whole lot of fun. Andrade does win here with the message, but this match, you have Orange Cassidy trying to put his hands in his pockets, but Andrade countering with the pose and the ropes. I love the character work we're getting from Andrade in this. But he gets Cassidy's zips Andrade's pocket shut, prompting Andrade to, of course, remove his pants. Cassidy responds by moving his own pants to reveal more pants underneath, which is a fantastic sting spot if you are a fan of Northeast wrestling. You might know it as the CPA spot as well. That man rips off two shirts to reveal a third one. But this was so much fun. You have Leo Rush at ringside at one point here taking selfies with Andrade, briefly distracting them here. But Cassidy with that DDT on the floor I thought was great. You got an orange punch and multiple DDTs for a nice close near fall. But on what was I even trying to say? I'm just saying that Andrade wins with the message, but I like went to say
Did Leo Rush get you into your head and throw you off?
Probably. Little freak running around my television.
I love what they're doing with him.
Andrade asked Cincinnati, where's the love? And how you know? You know what I mean?
You know, I mean, listen, both Andrade and Orange Cassidy, no one needs to hear that how good of wrestlers they are. It's been well established that both of them are fantastic. Orange having the double pant spot was hilarious. Very Orange Cassidy. Him zippering up Andrade's pockets as if it's like, I'm going to stop you from my game was very funny to me.
Incredible stuff.
The at 1LT pointing out that Orange Cassidy, like, slowly walking up to Leo still, even now, trying to be like, you can't, you know, hopefully you don't see me. That's very funny. Then the Andrade, Leo, how you know? He know. How you know? He know. Again, Leo Rush, they're using him perfectly as like these random, he shows up and like, he's going to start winning soon. You just see that coming a mile away.
Yeah. With this character, they can pick and choose their spots too. And I think he's doing work on ROH as well. So it's he's still getting his matches in. And I think they can see how all of this weirdness translates to the ring in ROH. But it's kind of cool because he'll get his wins when they have the right story for it. And until then, he can just be this little maniac.
I love 1LT being like, it's wild that Orange Cassidy is 42. I refuse to believe that. I think he's 30 perpetually. He just looks like it.
He ages like fine orange juice, which isn't really a thing. Orange juice does expire, but still.
Not if you're Orange Cassidy.
Not if you're Orange Cassidy, man.
Because he's always freshly squeezed.
It's true. It's always fresh.
No, it's but like I... And Andrade... Listen, since he's come back, Jesus, has he's been a hit.
Truly.
I mean, everything he's... The crowd interactions with the ladies in the crowd, the taking off of the pants, the way he's handling Don Callis to be like, I want out and, you know, I want my title shot, like, to have that. Like, that's the only interesting thing I see coming of the Don Callis family right now. Like, he's just a lot... He's been hitting on every cylinder. He's a lot of fun, and... When he came back, obviously, I wasn't upset. I'm like, yeah, he's great. I did not think he'd be at this level so soon. I thought there'd be like a
ramp up, but he just came in like a house of fire. I agree. Really, really compelled. Like, if you told me Andrade might be a Wrestler of the Year candidate this far into 2026, I would have been like, what? No. But he has been fantastic. We get a Tekla vignette where she declares death to stardom. She was not fired from Japan. Okay, she was fired from Japan. There should have been more of a women's presence on this show. But is what it is. Any thoughts on that? It was a pretty straightforward, like, hey, just a reminder, this is happening.
No, I like what Tekla's doing there, but there's nothing really to talk about.
I agree. We have our women's Owen Hart Cup quarterfinal with Sky Blue and Maya World. I love that Maya World got the win here with the code blue into a bridging pin. Sari, who was supposed to make her debut, unfortunately not cleared. She's still having some neck issues. But I love that we have like such empathy, obviously, for Maya World. But I love that Sky Blue was like, this is wrestling. I have no sympathy for such things. It just... starts attacking her, immediately starts mocking her. You have Maya answering with a leg lariat in this and a drive-by kick. And Sky regains control with a snap suplex in this. We get a cheeky Nandos and a Liger Bomb for two from Sky in this. But Sky attempting the code blue, Maya countering into the bridging pin. I thought was a really... some nice lady graps. Again, our thoughts with Maya World. She looked really great in this, and I always think it's nice when wrestling can contribute to relief from things that are bigger than wrestling, however that looks for you. What did you think of our women's Owen Hart?
The match itself was great. For a last minute put together, it was awesome. The real life story surrounding it is something like sad, but also the way she's using it and talking about it, and you know, apparently her brother being the inspiration. But she looked great. The story in the wrestling was also good because clearly this you can have Sky Blue lose here and it doesn't hurt Sky Blue because she wasn't expecting to wrestle Maya World. She wasn't expecting to wrestle a highly motivated Maya World. Like there is a story to be told. Like that's not too, if this were an authentic sport, you'd say, okay, yeah, this is, when does that, that's like when your team prepares for one quarterback and they get another and you're like, well, I wasn't ready for what, you know, the difference in style of gameplay. And then she gets her match against Athena, which is going to be a lot of, like Maya, listen, they signed Maya World because she's awesome. They didn't bring her in, just because. So this was a good match, and the whole story, the story of the match to me was proving that she, just because she was a fill-in doesn't mean she was a unworthy. And I liked that story of the match. Like, that even though, yes, she's filling in for Suri, and yes, there's a story. You know, Jesse, I'm sorry, Jesse Ozark saying that's just called losing. You know,
hi, Jesse.
Clearly you've never heard of a moral victory. But yeah,
we're also getting Athena versus Minion too, which is awesome. Like, Athena has gone so far out of her way in real life to kind of, like, she clearly has this very important relationship in real life with Maya and Texas wrestling and Texas women's wrestling and Texas black women's wrestling. She's talked about it in interviews. She's talked about it in promos. So the fact that that's the next round matchup, I think, makes it, like, such a, for somebody that was an unplanned entrant, like, a pretty vivid connection, which I really like. I really like. Well, then we got something else, dickhead. You want to talk about it?
No, not with that attitude.
They, first of all, I think censored dickhead, which cracks me up. I was like, do they just bleep dickhead? Of all things, but ZSJ appears via vignette, and he had my undivided and immediate attention because I was very excited to find out if he would be on Forbidden Door and what he was doing. He notes that he beat Nigel last year, and he says he wants the best AEW has to offer, and he names Kenny as someone he'd never faced in America, which I thought was a nice touch there. And he challenges Omega at Forbidden Door. And then we find out, all of us kind of found out at once, to be honest, that we're getting Bad Dude Tito minutes against Kenny Omega on Collision, which I keep forgetting is tomorrow because of the taping there. So, a good day. A good day if you're a TMDK fan. If you're a TMDK gal.
If you, I mean, they're like a bunch of liars. They kneel. I've seen them kneel.
You just got to accept it at some point that it's like the
spirit. I refuse. I refuse.
Spirit thing. You know what I mean?
I refuse.
You refuse, you lose, pal.
I guess, but I just refuse. No, this is ZSJ versus Omega was not the matchup I thought they were going to go with, and I am not upset that it's the matchup they decided to go with.
Yeah, especially if Samoa Joe's not going to be around, because, like, that's still in my ether from, like, what, 3 years ago? Maybe four?
Yeah.
Well, I still need it, but I mean, my God, like, you have the master of one style versus the master of another. I love that. And I also love that they're giving Tito a match to help facilitate that. I think that's awesome. I think that's really, really cool. Tito's been on ROH a little bit. You had a lot of TMDK presence on ROH, and then Shane went and won the NOAH championship. Might have to talk to him about that on screen at some point. Maybe we'll do a little
interview. No, I don't think you do.
Well, too bad, because we're already setting it up, so.
I don't think you do. I'm putting kibosh on that. I have that authority.
You do not. Okay, we were going to do it already, but we had to be deeper into the season of Love Island first, so that is how that goes.
Gotta love the island.
Gotta love the island. MJF is making a deal with the Don Callis family, because why have a single fucking heel on the show that exists free of the Don Callis family? MJF approaches him and asks for five members to join him for his Forbidden Door steel cage team match that we're getting, because that feud needs to be prolonged. Callis initially objects until MJF has a briefcase just full of cash. And Kevin Knight volunteers, but only if the victory earns him a future world championship shot. I like the way that this unfolded for what it was. And Don Callis also promises that the family would handle Darby Allin because there's 9 trillion of them, so they should be able to handle business kind of all around. Andrade again asks about his own world championship opportunity, and Callis claims he guaranteed it, though commentary pretty openly doubting him on that. Your thoughts?
I liked the money being handed out by the group. I thought that was funny. Mark Davis had a funny look on his face the entire time. If you go back and watch it, he just is reacting in his own way. It was very good. I told you I'm hoping this is the way they get Kevin Knight out of the Don Callis family. But I don't like it because I still don't like Kevin Knight in there. But there is another way in which, so Kevin Knight only gets it if his team wins, right? He only gets his championship match.
Correct. Yeah, the victory earns him a title match.
If someone from the Callis family takes the pin, Kevin Knight could be furious, saying, "Hey, I joined you thinking this gets me, and you guys just caught." I'm not liking that they even put us in this story, but I'm trying to make it work. Damn it, that could work. But yeah, I mean, I was kind of excited when he had brought in Blake Christian, and you know, that was going to be the group that they were going with, the Swirl. It's like, oh, it'll be something unique. And nope, it's the Don Callis family.
I mean, MJF did say in this episode that friends are overrated and he likes money. So I like that he was like, oh, but fuck, I still need friends. Like, that was a nice touch in this. I'm not mad about that. And I'm not mad about Swerve Strickland versus Brody King, because holy hell, these two absolutely tear it down when they are in the ring together, as one would expect. I didn't even mind that this was an overrun match, because I thought it was really good. But you have Brody dominating early with chops and corner attacks and a cannonball on the floor. You have Swerve in a chair preparing for another attack, but Prince Nana intervenes, which was a cute spot. You got a stomp from the apron through Brody in the chair, which I thought was pretty inventive use of a chair, considering how frequently chairs get used. We don't see a lot of stuff like this, so that was cool. The Avalanche Russian leg sweep and the Swerve stomp I thought was nasty. You have people busted open in this. You would think we were a show on SiriusXM hosted by Dave LaGreca and stupid Bully Ray, because my goodness, bleeding blood. Brody catches Swerve's dive and hits a Baldo bomb into the announce desk. These two beat the ever-living shit out of each other. Swerve hits multiple house calls in this that Brody survives. We get the DVD in the corner spot. There was a ton here, but we have a distracted referee and Prince Nana striking Brody. Aubrey couldn't keep her head on a swivel on this one. Swerve going for the vertebraker and Nana interfering and allowing for that to happen. Swerve is moving on, so it certainly feels like we are headed toward a Swerve Ospreay finals here. And I'm not mad about it, because that match fucking ruled when we saw it the first time. This was a fantastic way to close the episode. And we get a preview of Collision, which again is on tomorrow. So, summer blockbuster, baby. Let's go. Your thoughts on our final match? I thought they tore it down.
How? In a non-DQ, in a non-DQ match, I should stress, did they seem so incredibly violent?
Yeah. Well, part of it is just like they beat the hell out of each other within the confines of legal wrestling moves, right? Like, that was nuts. That was nuts.
I guess that's within 12.
Okay, next.
But
Danhausen getting to work.
We'll see. That's still a big hill to climb. But yeah, it just how violent this match was, and wasn't a no DQ match, so all of it had to stay within the bounds of a legal match, and they just hit each other hard, and everything seemed, you know, the house call when Brody stood up after getting it, like, Jesus, it just. I couldn't see a world in which Brody won simply because the matchup between Swerve and Ospreay was right there, and how do you not do it? But part of me was like, man, they are giving they're giving a lot for Brody King to work with here, and it just was incredible. You know, he looks like he got busted open the hard way. It's such a good match. Oh my God. But it's just so, the thing I couldn't get over, we see all these like Texas Death Match and all these very violent matches, and this felt as violent as any of them with none of the extra attached to it.
Yeah, like there's something really beautiful with matches like that. Like there was a TLC match with Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns, and it was like a Vince era TLC match, and some of those were not great. Especially in feuds that got run back a couple times. It might have even been pandemic era. I can't fully remember. But I was watching that match and I was like, man, they did such a good job of keeping the focus on the story and not making it about just like, here's this spot, here's this weapon, blah, 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 blah. This almost, it didn't have the same resources in the same way. But, like, it had that same feeling of just, like, man, they took the violence level up a notch just, like, within the confines of the story that they were telling the match. So,
by the way, the Knicks are only down 9 now.
This could get interesting.
They could come back and win this.
They could. Oh. Yeah, because there's still 6:35 left.
Yeah, that might be their game now, which is incredible.
That's cuckoo bananas.
But, yeah, no, this was awesome.
Well said by Jamie in the chat. Love a match that reminds you that wrestling is meant to be a violent fight. Yeah, that like kind of sums it up perfectly. But you go ahead, Ray.
No, that's I got caught up in it's apparently 7 now. The Spurs are making dumb mistakes.
I'm a huge Knicks fan. That's why I'm representing the orange tonight.
Yeah, I mean, the blue. Listen, I don't really care at this point. Just see who's gonna.
Speaking of Sir Jamie, when you said, Kate blowing up my spot Monday at 9, are you interviewing our dear Shane? Our dear Shanathan, let me know. And let me know when it's out so I can have Fightful article.
Apparently one LT can't read, by the way. It's because I'm seeing 10 points that they moved it back up to 10, so.
Oh, damn. Well.
We'll see. Listen, they were down 30 and now they're up 11. Now they're only down 11. That's a.
Will they finish the story?
It's tough. It's tough. Oh, and looks like you're right.
Oh, hell yeah, Jamie. Okay. Good to know.
Dropping Monday. All right, well, yeah, I don't have anything else on the match. I thought it was awesome. That was just really incredible.
No, I mean, the big news of the day is we're getting CSJ versus Kenny Omega, and that confirms that God exists and that prayers get answered. Because can we get much higher? Let's go watch some late fourth quarter basketball. Thank you guys so much for watching. Ryan, where can people find you? Find us.
Find us on all socials at Mark Order Pod. You can follow my YouTube history at Here for History. There will be new stuff coming out soon. At _ Here for History on some of the socials. Kate, we pretty much know where we can find you, but why don't you tell us anyway?
You can find me in the club, bottles full of dub. You can find me at Fightful and at Miss Kate Fabe on social media. I am working on getting permission to do ROH watch-alongs, like with the footage on screen. So hopefully that comes to fruition because I would love to spend some of my Thursday doing that or even just be able to watch it on delay. I think that could be super, super fun. But my own YouTube channel will get up and running sooner than later, now that I have working hips and my schedule is starting to take shape for Sunday for summer. But I will also just ask you guys, if you haven't already, to check out my interview with Deonna Purrazzo. She was so great to talk to. So great to talk to. She made my job so easy. I also learned some things about her. That's on Fightful, but it's also a collab on my YouTube channel, so you can check that out, whichever channel you feel like viewing it on. But she gave me like over 20 minutes and we talked all about Battle for the Brave. We talked about how women's pure stories don't have to emulate kind of what the standard has been, not even because of gender specific, but just diversifying what pure wrestling can mean. Some really cool stuff. Some really cool stuff. Thank you, Greg, for the kind words. Spurs are fucked, jacking up threes. Let's get out of here and go watch the rest of this basketball game, guys. Thank you for hanging out with us. We say goodbye. and good night.
I put the outro thing up. I turn up the volume for the outro, and then I hit outro.
The Mark Warner Podcast. We now return you to your regularly scheduled program.